Are Americans' views on marriage changing? We take a look at some recent studies there. There are views changing on crime. San Francisco bolstering law and order. Pittsburgh removing it. Minnesota is debating pride flags. And Missouri is debating drag shows. All of that. Plus, Representative Tommy Pope on the show today on the Palmetto Family Matters show. Welcome into the Monday edition of the fastest growing and strongest conservative talk show in the state of South Carolina. It's the Palmetto Family Matters show. Justin Hall, Mitch Prosser with you. It is Monday, March 11th in the year of our Lord, 2024.
Ding.
And we are glad to be with you. If you missed our State of the Union discussion from last Friday, I encourage you to go back and listen to it.
But don't listen to Joe Biden's State of the Union.
Don't listen to his State of the Union. Listen to us talk about his State of the Union. Don't waste your time. Make it profitable. We called balls and strikes on that for about 30 minutes. But today we start our show going out to the phones, welcoming in Representative Tommy Pope, Speaker pro tem. And a lot of the times, folks, let me tell you, when I tune into that session,
he's speaking,
and typically he's calling somebody down and requesting that they please find their seat and get themselves in order. Representative Pope joining us. Thank you, sir, for finally getting on the program. We have not invited you yet, so I can't say you've spurned us. We've sort of spurned you without intention. And so we're glad to have a celebrity on the program finally.
Oh, Lord. Well, I'm glad to be here. I appreciate it. So today being Monday, we're starting the budget process today. So we'll come in a day early and work this week. So Tommy's going to have to wear his Buster Browns or something, because I think I'll be on my feet calling people down a lot this week, along with Speaker Smith.
Yeah, it's budget week is a long week, but I think it's an important one. You want to know how your money's being spent and where it's going. A lot to get into. I want to get to some of the bills that have passed out of the House first, and then we're going to end with one that's coming in. So obviously, within the first couple of weeks of the session, a lot of major pieces of legislation that Palmetto Family was looking to get accomplished this year was read across that desk inside that big room over there under the Copper Dome. One of those being the Help Not Harm bill, and making sure that children are protected and will stay the way they were born to be. With such a divisive political culture that we live in now, many folks said, "Oh, this is nothing more than a political football. These groups and representatives like yourself are just doing this to try to score political points." But that was the most basic of issues, Representative. I mean, a boy is a boy, a girl is a girl. Mr. Rogers said so, and God says so, ultimately. To get a piece of legislation passed out of the House, I don't want to say easily, but rather convincingly, to start the session, started you guys off on the right foot and just basic common sense this session.
I think it's a credit to the leadership, you know, starting with Speaker Smith and Davey Hyde. I think it's a reflection of the Republican caucus and the issues we believe in. I will tell you, you know, back home, you know, they call me a rhino because I want to hear both sides before I decide. So I will tell you, when we first started seeing some of these issues, I truly thought, and I'll give you another example, like the library book issues. Yep. You know, I thought, man, are we over the top a little bit? Are we being too extreme? Are we looking, you know, what is it, a solution, looking for a problem or whatever? Yep. I will tell you, unfortunately, as I've educated myself, again, using the library book issue, it blows my mind that these things are happening. You know, I got a text today about something being taught in a classroom up here, because I don't want us to be pure Prairie League. I don't want us to be police in your bedroom type thing. But we also have an obligation to protect the citizens of the state, and particularly the under 18-year-olds in this state. And so I was felt strong and confident in supporting the bill. You know, it's not preventing adults from making the decisions, but it is protecting young people. I saw this, and not to make light of this situation, but I saw on Twitter some guy, you know, because you always see in Hollywood they're adopting these kids from Africa, little boys, and they got them in dresses or whatever. And this one guy commented and said, when I was a kid, he said, I always wanted to be a pirate. He said, I'm glad mama didn't cut my hand off, give me a hook, poke my eye out, and give me a peg leg. You know,
absolutely.
He wants to be a pirate when he's 18. That's his business. So I'm glad that we did what we did. I feel strongly about it. And I think you've got a vocal minority that is railing against it.
Good news is it looks like that bill is going to be heard in the state Senate tomorrow. And they've set up for special order. We're excited about that. Another bill that y'all passed early, man, just the good hits have just kept on coming. AVA, the age verification bill, putting a bouncer at the door of every website, pornographic website in the state. Nearly unanimous in its passage out of the state house. Another great piece of work. I know Travis Moore, Weston Newton, you, the speaker, Davey Hyatt, all outstanding job. Thanks for doing that as well.
Well, again, it goes back to what we were just saying a minute ago. If you didn't dive into the issue, you think we're big brother. You know, we're just trying to meddle in your life or something. And I don't want the state to parent. We need to be parenting our own children and protecting. But at some point, it's just the same reason we have seatbelt laws or speed limits or anything else. At some point, you've got to dial in and do the things the state is responsible for. And you know, the genie has been out of the bottle for so long. I don't magically think us passing this fixes everything. But the old cliche thing, if you can save, you know, or a handful of lives. I truly think, you know, our good friend Brandon Guffey and the experience he had with the sextortion and his son, again, educated me. You know, you guys know I've been a prosecutor, a police officer. I've been around a long time. My eyes are getting open to things I would not have believed. I would have believed we're hallucinating or, you know, gaslighting, whatever you want to call it, that it wasn't really happening, you know, just because I saw it on my Twitter feed or whatever. Mm-hmm. But these things are real, and we've got some obligation to deal with.
We certainly do.
In spite of the jokes that were made in the well about some of that, and of course, we talked about that on the show as well.
I want to ask a question before we move to a bill that's coming over. Sure. And I think a lot of people, as we're tracking legislation, and we do our best on this program and within our informational pieces of trying to help people understand the process and understand how things are done. Because when it's the off season, actually, let me rephrase that. Some people think there is an off season. There is not. And we get asked all the time, why can't we just do one thing at a time? And I'm sure you get that a lot as well. But walk people through just the process of, as you know, I don't want to say we have to go into the School of Rock thing, but a bill gets read across the desk, and it might be you, it might be Speaker Smith who read it across. Then it gets sent to a committee. It has to pass a very high bar to get to the point of actually being debated on the floor.
And by the way, you're getting Jack Black and I'm Just a Bill mixed up, but you know.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was going to bust loose when I'm Just a Bill. I live on Capitol Hill.
Oh, yeah, good call.
But I am old school now. So in simplest terms, and I tell this to my constituents, I'll even take a step further. Somebody gets an idea, and it could be anything, something you noticed, or you were just sitting there drinking coffee with your spouse one day and you thought, literally, you can call me, I can get it put on paper and it can become a bill, not a law, a bill. So that bill, as you said, has to pass, you know, simple civics has to pass both bodies. But it starts either place, House or Senate, with the exception of the budget stuff, as we learned on the marijuana bill last time. But it gets read across the desk. We have to have three readings in each body. So the first reading is basically just getting it in the system. You know, you don't hear debate. You see me, if you watch, sometimes I'm reading stacks and stacks and stacks, you know, judiciary, LCI, you know, whichever, Senate committees. So once that happens, it goes to the committee, it gets signed to a subcommittee. There in the subcommittee is normally where you have the citizen input. You know, if citizens file cert bills, they have an opportunity to come and be heard. If it passes that subcommittee, and this is just to point out, as you said, how many hurdles we're looking at, it then goes to the full committee of, for example, judiciary. I'll give an example. We had a hearing this past week on judicial reform, the committee I've been working on for about a year. They took public information. They hadn't passed it on yet. They want to keep looking at it some more, but then they'll have another meeting. Ultimately, it'll go to judiciary. Then it'll come out to the floor. When it gets out to the floor, that's second reading. Second reading is where you actually see the debate on the floor. It can be changed, amended. Sometimes for a lot of us, that might be the first time we heard anything about this particular bill, because I'll give an example. There was a bill about hunting dogs and removing the collars that is very important in an agricultural committee. But because I've been following judicial reform, maybe I wasn't dialed into that. Those debates then take place on the floor. If we pass it, then that's really the heavy lifting. And then you have third reading, which is normally, again, perfunctory, but you know, like even on the abortion debates and things, the big crux of what you saw was on second reading. So if we pass it, it then goes to the Senate. And that's got to, everything I just said, it's got to happen all over again. If they agree, it goes to the governor. If they don't, it can come back. You saw on the gun laws recently, you end up having a conference committee and they try to work out the differences. So going back to your core question, there is a lot of vetting that goes on. And, you know, even sometimes when I'm helping constituents and they'll go, it'll get to the floor and they'll go, well, I don't like the way that reads. Why don't you fix that? And I'm thinking, we're having to make it through 124 different people with the majority. Obviously, you got to have half, 65, I guess, or whatever, 64. But we've got to get it through that group of people. And so rarely is it as pure as you wish it was.
Right.
And that's just the nature of the beast. It doesn't, yeah. It's funny, during the child safety debate on transsexual issues, we get about three quarters of the way through and there's an amendment that is really looks great, but could derail things, that I vote against. That, of course, quickly a picture is placed on the internet and I got somebody saying, you support child mutilation. And I'm texting them back from the floor going, you'll give me about 10 more minutes. This bill is going to pass and I'm a co-sponsor.
Yeah.
But, that's a little bit of the gamesmanship we're dealing that we used to not.
Yeah.
Well, and sometimes we miss the forest for the trees, and sometimes we miss the trees for the forest. And sometimes, I think one of the biggest issues when it comes to, and we've said this for some time, we said this earlier with you before we started the show, if you like to eat sausage, don't come down to the State House, because that's where the sausage is made. So it takes a well-rounded approach. It takes a well-rounded view of how things get done. A lot of people want to hone in on one specific thing and say, this is all that exists. And then others want to back up and say, this is all that exists. And both have to be happening at the same time. As the legislative process occurs, that's not just happening on one bill, as we've been told needs to happen. Yeah. It's happening on a couple thousand bills.
It's funny. I was thinking, I've been in public service since I was 18, and I'm getting a little long in the tooth now, but I was thinking about the Bible verse, do not grow weary from doing good. And I thought, I'm really not weary of doing good. I'm weary of majoring in the minors from some guy arguing with me about, well, this does this. It cures cancer, but yes, you got to give them your driver's license or whatever. It is exhausting.
Yeah.
Not doing the heavy lifting, but doing the well, what about this, or what about me, or what, right. That part will wear you out. And I worry we're going to lose good people that want to do the right thing and see it get done, as you said, So.
Yeah. During that help not harm debate, I did make a note on my Twitter page that perhaps before we judge the votes of people, we may need to actually be watching the debate that's happening. That's beside the point. I know we're short on time. I you mentioned marijuana at the beginning. We got to get to it. That we're audio only today. I'm air quoting Compassionate Care Act, passed in the Senate. It's over in the House now. And it's not on the floor for debate at this point. This is very similar to a bill that was heard in the House previously. You, as the speaker in that moment, had to issue a ruling on a challenge of constitutionality based on the fact that that was a revenue generating bill that originated in the Senate. We mentioned Schoolhouse Rock earlier. I got it right this time. If it's a revenue generating bill or deals with the budget taxes, constitutionally, and I believe this is state and federal, it's got to start in the House. It can't start in the Senate. And that was the ruling.
Well, you know, because I'm a former prosecutor, before I'm law enforcement, you know, much was made that I just was against the bill. I take seriously my job when I'm presiding up there, calling balls and strikes. What happened there, and what kind of surprises me about the new bill, they've removed the revenue part. So again, you know, not maybe I'll be called to rule on it, maybe I won't, but I think that bill has changed. What surprised me, I thought the logic would be, because if you are going to do all these things that the bill purports to do, you are going to need revenue. You know, one of the selling points, they always talk about taxation. I'm not sure why it didn't start in the House this time. I mean, I'm not asking for them to, but I'm saying that would have remedied that to start with. But there was no one that had, you know, that particular bill that came through. So if we end up seeing it on the floor, the biggest concern I have is that it appears, and again, I hadn't gone through it with a fine tooth comb, it appears to be setting up a heck of an infrastructure that looks to me to transcend just medical. It looks that it's you know, setting up some places, looks like we'll have more dispensaries than we have medical facilities in a given county. And so that's somewhat concerning, but again, you know, I'll be one man, one vote, you know, when it comes down to that, barring, you know, the requirement of making a ruling. And I want compassionate care for our citizens. And I'm willing to support that. But I think that is a little bit of a facade for what may be underlying this whole bill.
So without the tax element and component in the bill in order to make it feasible or sufficient to come from the Senate, the fiscal impact report is up for debate. I've heard some people refer to how much it's going to cost, whether it's $6 million, $12 million. There have been several different questions in regard to that. Let's go to a few pieces. Senator Greg Hembree from Horry County talked about substantive changes to the bill, because one of the things that was said early on was that this is identical except for the tax component. This bill is the same as S-150 from last session. 243 is the same. And the answer is no, it's not. There's some clear and stark differences. Talk a little bit about a few of those differences you've noted, maybe specifically on dispensaries, as you just mentioned, the sunset clause, and some of the people that will, and I'm using air quotes now, benefit from this bill.
You know, I have only followed it, you know, quite candidly. You guys are probably more, you know, dialed into it than I am. As you know, I spent about the last year working on judicial reform, and, you know, maybe Tommy's a one trick pony, you know, he's not, you know, maybe for another episode, we'll talk about that, you know. Yeah. In fairness, I'm really not as dialed into the specifics. I know there's a sunset, which I think is kind of we do it often. It's kind of a political ploy to get people to accept it and say it'll go away. But, you know, you also can't unring a bell. And so right. I think if we get 8 years down the road on this, then it's here to stay. And if that's what people want, then I want to respect that. But from where I sit right now, I don't see that I can support it.
Do you think that sunset is within the time frame that would move toward? And of course, we're only speculating at this point. But we have seen evidence from other states, namely Colorado, where they started medicinally and then moved within 8 years or so to full recreational usage. If Dr. 420 and the edible shop has opened up here in the state, it's pretty inconceivable that in 8 years, if we tell them as a state we're done with them, they're just going to pack up and go away.
Well, I'll kind of play both sides of the coin. I know we finally, it took a lot of work by law enforcement, but, you know, finally cleared out video poker after, you know, the window when it was open and then when it was gone. So I'm not saying that can't happen. I'd be very surprised if it did. And I'll say that, you know, the abuse of medicinal, you know, my experience, I had a young man he's an adult now, but lived in California. You know, he's a kid in his 20s working a job just because he's sore. He has a marijuana card. And so that's the thing I think, too. I am not I don't lack compassion for people. Cancer is the bane of my family. I've seen what chemotherapy can do, but I'm concerned that we are transcending that.
Yeah. I think that's the key, and that's what makes, and this isn't flowery language just because you're on with us, but that's what makes a good statesman. That's what makes a good representative, a good senator. You have your convictions, hold to them, vote them. That's what you're there to do. But you also have to understand both sides of the issue. You can't just understand why you're voting for something. You got to understand why you're not voting for something and understand why others are, so you can try to do that dirty little thing called compromise on some issues. Don't use
that word, Justin. I'm already a rhino. Don't be
sorry. I'm sorry. Well, you're a rhino. I'm a Christian nationalist. It's fine. We get called all kinds of names. It is what it is. We know Representative Pope's got to get to some budget meetings, and that, oh, exciting, to talk about money. We appreciate you, sir. When we have you on again, I want to bring you back on to talk about judicial reform. We've had conversations with Attorney General Alan Wilson about that, and he's got his own view on how it should go. And obviously, both in the Senate and the House, we're dealing with judicial reform bills. So it's a convoluted-ish issue. So we want to bring you back on to kind of shed some light on your wheelhouse and that one pony that you have, according to you. So we'll have you back on, but we appreciate you joining us today.
Hey, I always enjoy it, man. I appreciate the hard work y'all doing. I think you're doing good work, and we need more voices like you guys that will bring some clarity rather than just propaganda, and I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. That's Representative Tommy Pope joining us right here on the show. We want to thank Speaker Pro Tem Tommy Pope, Representative Pope, for joining us on the program today. Always good to talk with him, and first time we talked to him on the air, Mitch, and enjoyed that conversation quite a bit.
He's an amazing man, a great representative, and a good friend. I enjoy spending time with him and picking his brain. He's
absolutely
really smart.
Let's go. Speaking of really smart, the Institute for Family Studies has put out a new. This is a new study-ish. It came out in September of last year. But there's a book that I'm starting to read by Brad Wilcox, a professor from Virginia. Go Wahoos. Basically says that to counter the culture today, you need to get married. You need to get married and have kids. That's the best way that you can counter the culture in America today. This actually shows that to be the case. What percentage of how much do you agree that children are better off if they have two married parents? They surveyed 18 to 55-year-olds. And conservative college-educated people surveyed, 91% said children are better off if they have two married parents. Those who are conservative and less educated, I don't know what the less educated means. I suppose that just means with a high school diploma or a GED or nothing.
I think that's their threshold.
73%. Liberals who are college-educated, 30% of college-educated liberals say children are better off if they have married parents, which tells me that 70% of them said no, children are not better off inerrantly
if they have
married parents.
I don't know what their sliding scale is here. I think we'd have to dive deeper into the study itself and not just the report. They may have slightly more, certainly more, they may just have different numbers there.
Sure.
But I want to talk in just a moment when we work through this. There's this, and Rick Santorum got in trouble several years ago on the presidential campaign trail for talking about this four-part success formula. Palmetto Family has been a strong proponent of this four-part success formula for years. Mm-hmm. I've written about it extensively. Orrin Smith has written about it. It just makes sense. Tell us some more about the numbers here.
For instance, from 2006 to 2020, the number of adults who said that it is, quote, important for unmarried couples who have a child together to legally marry fell from 76% to 60%, as did the share of adults who say divorce is, quote, unacceptable. Shifts in public opinion about the value of stable marriage has been driven in part by elite discourse on the subject. We've seen a recent surge in media commentary minimizing or denying the effects that divorce, single parenthood, and family instability have on children. One University of San Francisco professor, Laura Bazelon, recently wrote in the New York Times that divorce is, quote, painful and heartbreaking, but it can also be liberating, pointing the way toward a different life that leaves everyone better off, including the children. Now, again, I want to make, I want to try to start doing something that just I really feel has been impressed upon me just in discourse and talking with others. Too often as Christian conservatives, especially Christian conservatives who might have a platform as we do, we try to come up with the spicy hot take. We try to come up with the punch that's going to punch hard, mm-hmm. and we're going to make a difference. And I want to be very frank with you. I listen to Ben Shapiro nearly daily. I'm not him. I'm not trying to be him. And let's be fair, I don't hold him to a Christian standard because he's not a Christian.
And I like you.
Yeah.
You're God made you, you.
Yeah.
I like you. And I think most of our listeners do too.
Well, most of them. what I'm saying is, I think that we need to be more, and we're going to have to do that later on in the show with what we're going to talk about. We need to stop treating each other as enemies. We are not enemies. Those people who get divorced are not my enemy. Those people who jiggle around in drag in front of children are not my enemy. They're being used as tools by the enemy, but they're not the enemy. They are, in fact, image bearers. They were made in the image of God.
That's right.
They're denying that, Romans 1, and they're exchanging the creator for the creation. I get that. Exchanging the moral for the immoral.
The truth of God for a lie.
But they're still image bearers, yeah. And they're deserving of respect. So as we go through these things, understand that divorce was never God's intention.
No.
Marriage between a man and a woman for life, it's a covenant that God has used to illustrate his relationship with his church.
And I think the other thing that the lady that you quoted, Laura, she's using the exception to premise the rule.
Yes.
Are there exceptions in which divorce is a good thing?
I think if someone's in an abusive relationship, yes, you need to separate yourself from
them. And by good, I mean better than that.
Sure.
Better than abuse. Better than abandonment. Better than, whatever.
Infidelity.
Infidelity, you know. Yeah. But is it a good thing? You know, I've heard, that sounds like something that mommy and daddy tell the kids right before they break the news. Mommy and daddy, you're going to have two Christmases.
Yeah, it's not.
It's
not an inerrant good. And to say that it is better in some situations might be plausible.
Is it better than the trauma inflicted by abuse? Possibly. Is it also better that mommy and daddy go to a counselor? Is it better than that?
Is it better that mommy or daddy do not abuse the other?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
Yeah.
So the answer is, it's the exception to the rule.
There's a reason why, and I think recent studies are starting to show this. Even though we live in I almost said it. We live in interesting times, and the prevailing notion that I need to be a young, entrepreneurial, spirited, low-level businessman selling widgets and gadgets in my cubicle, and if I make enough money, and if I live in a nice enough house on my own, then I'll be happy. What we find is, typically, those who are happiest, those men and women who are happiest, are ones who are married and who have children. Because I'm gonna blow your mind, but it's almost as if there was some intelligent designer who wired human beings, human hearts and minds and souls, to yearn for something bigger than themselves. Because guess what? And some of us in this room have experienced this already. Some of us in this room go to bed every night right now thinking that this is about to become their reality.
Impending doom.
Raising children isn't necessarily for your benefit. It's a good thing, but ultimately you're raising a human being. You're raising a future adult. And the sleepless nights may not pay off, and the parenting and the discipline might not pay off until, Mitch, they're 27, 28, 29, 40 years old, and they still want to come around. And they still want to hang out with you.
Yeah, there's little wins along the way, like this morning up at 5:30-ish, and I got a few minutes of quiet before the morning got going, and my youngest son came and crawled up in my lap and cuddled under the blanket with me, and I just thought, this is good. I like this. Now, later he's going to be, you know, screaming or picking his nose or hitting his brother or all the things that the youngest six-year-old does.
Sure.
But there's that little win in the moment. You know, in the system that we currently have, and I won't say that this has always been the four-part formula for success, but in the modern age as we know it, I think it's important for you to do these four things in this order. The first thing you need to do is graduate high school. Get an education. I think the bare bones minimum education today, and I think there are different ways that this can happen. Does everyone need to go to a college preparatory school? No.
No.
But you need to learn how to read, right. Speak the language, write intelligibly, yep. And do math.
That would help.
Those things matter. You can do history, science. If you're going to be an engineer, you probably need to do some geometry, some algebra, and some science, some basic logical science. If you're going to be a biologist, anatomy, physiology, biology. Done. Get an education. Now, beyond that, I think you need to do one of three things to further your education. You either need to go to college, which has been the preferred method of the culture at large, thrust upon many young people to the detriment of their ultimate long-term success. That's a lot of words for saying don't incur debt that you aren't going to use. Do not go to school and get an English degree. I'm sorry. That's unpopular. There's your hot take. Don't get an English degree. Get an education degree. Get an accounting degree. Get a public relations. Get a theology degree. And then go do something with that. Don't get a generic degree. Okay. Trade. Perhaps you need to become a journeyman. Or an apprentice, let me say it that way. You need to become the protege of a mentor. And you need to learn a trade. Because in the world that we are about to go into, that we're on the precipice of, I think we're already getting a taste of it. You need to know how to do something tangible. Mm-hmm. Even if all you do is learn how to fix your own washing machine or change your oil. Learn how to do that stuff. And the third way to further your education, to set you up for success, is to join the military. Right. So college, trade, military, so that's step one. Graduate high school, further your education. Then get a job. Then get a job. Start a career, not for the sake of self-fulfillment or climbing a corporate ladder. Be able to provide. And this is about to be another antiquated, misogynistic hot take, especially if you're a man. Especially if you're a man. By the way, step three is get married. Boys don't marry girls. Now, that sounds antithetical to everything you've heard Palmetto Family and this show stand for. Let me clarify. Men marry women. Boys don't marry girls. Grow up. Get an education, get a job, then get married. And lastly, have children. And if you do anything in that sequence, outside of that sequence, you're not setting yourself up for success in this culture. If you did them out of that sequence and you are successful, congratulations. Good job. Proud of you. But you set yourself up for success and your progeny, your children, up for success when you do it in that order. Graduate high school, further your education through college, trade, or military. Get a job after that. Then get married. then have children, and then enjoy the fruit of your labor and keep on working. Because, Justin, you know, you're about to know, once you have those kids, the job ain't done. It's just right. begun.
Sure.
And, boy, is it fun.
Absolutely.
It's fun.
Two quick things before we move on, because we got to move here. Link between family structure and college graduation is actually stronger for millennials than it was for boomers. 40% of millennials who grew up in intact families graduated from college by their mid-20s, compared to just 17% of them from non-intact families. The boomer generation, by the way, millennials refer to those from 1980 to 1984. Born in 1980 to 1984.
Which is really off.
It's a very small number
A small window.
Boomers from 57 to 63, again, small number. 26% who grew up in intact families graduated from college. Again, the emphasis on college, I think, is very different. Those who have reached the middle class are higher by the mid-30s. Millennials who grew up in intact families, 77%, compared to just 57% of millennials who grew up in non-intact families, about a 20% difference. Family structure matters. And I think as we continue to move forward in 2024, these conversations probably need to be had at a higher level, probably need to be discussed. You know, instead of dealing with time change bills and things like that, perhaps that we could do things that really, you know, incentivize the family. Meanwhile, there are two different stories here that I want to get into. One of them is from San Francisco. Mayor London Breed on election day shouted, "Change is coming," to thundering applause from the patio at her election party. Now, London Breed is the mayor of San Francisco. And what we found is a shift in San Francisco. Proposition E bolsters police power in the city. Now, if you remember, you might not have to be too old to remember.
Only about 4 years ago.
They defunded the police in San Francisco. They took them off the street. And I'm going to let you in on a little secret. When you take law enforcement off the street, guess what you don't have? Enforcement of the law. Crazy.
I know.
Shocking. So they're going to bolster police power in the city. And the second, Proposition F, will require drug screening and treatment for people receiving county welfare benefits who are suspected of illicit drug use. Again, San Francisco kind of made it more widely available that, well, if you're going to do these drugs, make sure you go to this place where it's safe to do them.
Yeah, Clean Needle Exchange.
Turns out.
By the way, that's here in South Carolina as well. It's being heard in the State House.
Turns out, man, need to work on getting rid of that. Turns out, taking law enforcement off the street and allowing people to have rampant drug use in the city does not work. And so San Francisco has said, we are going in reverse. Enough is enough, said Mayor London Breed. We need change. State Senator Scott Wiener, Democrat of San Francisco, said, quote, "This city has been getting beaten up for the last few years, and San Francisco is coming back, and it's going to be even better than ever." Now, the key to that is they're doing that with more law enforcement and less drugs, which appears to be antithetical to the Democratic Party platform. But they're doing it with less drugs and more police. Pittsburgh, let's go to the other side of the country. Pittsburgh is going in a different direction.
Rick, what was the big takeaway today?
Yeah, Susan, residents of the city will see a major change in the way police respond. They will no longer respond to calls that aren't considered in-progress emergency. That means calls like criminal mischief, theft, harassment, and most burglary alarms will all be handled by an enhanced telephone reporting unit. That means residents will file a police report over the phone. Officers will not respond unless it's an emergency. Also, between the hours of 3 a.m. and 7 a.m., there will be no officers at any of the six stations throughout the city. Call boxes that link directly to 911 have been installed for people to use in case of an emergency. And during the overnight shift, there will be as few as 20 officers to cover the entire city. The chief said today the data supports that.
Yes, it's enough to cover the entire city in those hours when we have 8% of the time people are calling. I'm confident in the decisions that we make that it impacts this bureau and the city in a much better way than we have in the past.
Now, the chief also acknowledging today that some of these changes are due to staffing shortages. He's down to 740 officers, well below the 850 they would like to have. Now, coming up new at 5, residents, city council, and the police union all weighing in on these big changes that begin Monday. Live in the studio, Rick Earl, Channel 11 News.
So they haven't really learned their lesson yet.
Nope.
They will. Obviously, that police officer is not very fond of this. You could tell. I am reading what I've been given.
I'm spouting a line.
This will work. Absolutely. It will work.
The cops know. They know.
We'll see. I mean, y'all, when I live in a small town, and when I mean small town.
How many stoplights you got?
Within the town?
Sure.
One.
Ooh.
Well, there are four lights because it's a four-way intersection. So, I mean, how many are you counting? We have one traffic intersection and a couple of stop signs, right? It's a small town. When the police aren't patrolling as they should have before, and they're doing a great job now, I might add, petty theft went up, you know. Public nuisances went up. It's just natural inclination of a fallen world. Our world, and if you haven't, I would encourage you to do two things. If you haven't done these two things and you're trying to develop a Christian worldview, I'd encourage you to do that. Number one, the Truth Project, Dr. Del Tackett. Important to watch that to create that foundation of a biblical worldview. The second is his latest project, the Engagement Project. And in that, in the Engagement Project, he talks about at the very beginning the idea that our world is given toward entropy.
Yeah.
We are not, because of the fall, everything runs downstream to death. It doesn't go naturally to life. That's why you can't catch healing from somebody. You're going to catch disease, but you won't catch, you know, if you're sick and you go around a healthy person, you don't catch their health.
That's why evolution just makes virtually no sense.
Right, because
devolution does, and
order cannot come from chaos.
Mutation does, yes.
Right, and
every watch has a watchmaker.
Correct.
Yes.
So when a world is given toward entropy, when people are given toward their basest desires, and I think we all are. I think we all are. We all have a flesh nature.
Absolutely.
And left unattended and left without help, which is a good thing that we read in John 14, 13 and 14, that the helper has been sent, capital H. We're given toward entropy. So when there's not law enforcement, there typically tends to be less enforcement of the law. And that's what's happening, by the way, in Haiti, if you're not keeping up with what's happening in Haiti.
My goodness.
Gang attacks are continuing to paralyze Haiti. The U.S. embassy has been evacuated. By the way, that's the sixth U.S. embassy abroad that has been evacuated during this current administration. Not blaming the administration for this at all.
But
that's just a statement of fact.
But don't say things are safer here and abroad if they're not.
Yeah. Not only are these gangs going around and attacking places, they are also, let me, really quick, if you got children, I'll give you a second. All right, here we go. They're killing people and then eating them.
Yeah.
Now, Haiti and other islands have always had problems with gang violence. I don't think that's a stretch. to say the least, and I just think it's important for us to continue to monitor these situations. It's a dire situation in the Caribbean right now. The Prime Minister of Haiti cannot get back into the country, so there's no restoration of law and order. So we'll see what happens in Haiti over the coming days, and we might talk about this more in the coming days and weeks. Now, we have two bills that are being debated in Missouri and Minnesota. Do you want to go to Missouri first, or do you want to go to Minnesota first, Mitch?
Minnesota.
Let's go to Minnesota first. In Minnesota, there is a bill that is being debated inside their House, House Bill 4273. Now, I don't know if they do HB or if they just do H. We just do H here because we're simple. And this would ban rainbow flags. This would ban the pride flag. Now, full disclosure, I agree with that. Here's a school teacher testifying in this committee hearing. And let's hear what she has to say, and then we're going to give you some thoughts about why and why she's saying what she's saying.
I use she, her pronouns, and I've been a first grade teacher for 16 years. I'm here in support of this bill to make rainbow flag bans prohibited. What does a rainbow flag mean to my students, my classroom? Here are some words from my first grade babies. It means my teacher will stand up for me. It looks like the flags at my house, so I feel home. It means we all are here together. My students feel the importance of windows and mirrors. I want every child, family, and staff member to have a clear visual of inclusion and safety in the community I build. We know students, families, and staff members need to feel safe in order to learn, thrive, and continue to share their talents with us. My rainbow flag stands for welcoming spaces, trust, resilience, compassion, joy, collaboration, and community without judgment. And don't we all want that for all kids? I will always have agency to represent all communities in my classroom. It's important my students see their own and their family's identities in my space. Whether that includes our mural of Black excellence, our land acknowledgement written with some of our Native families, or my rainbow flag stating you are loved. My students, especially those whose stories are often left out, must feel represented and important, and it seems absurd that someone could take away that humanity from my students. So a piece of clarity from a former first grader, now 18, who still comes back to my safe space. Our rainbow flag means we'll always belong. Thank you for hearing my testimony.
Thank you very much for coming today and for your testimony. Thank you very much.
Okay, let's really quick. The bill is to ban, is to prohibit the flag being banned. So, they're...
Wait. So, the bill makes it so that they cannot be banned?
Correct.
Okay.
The bill makes it illegal for the rainbow flag to be banned. This first grade teacher, who I'm sure has intentions, she says that her first grade... And really quick, can I just say something? I feel like I have to say this. I don't hate public school. I was raised in public school. I was taught in the public school system. Separate from Palmetto Family, I believe that we did really need to look at the Federal Department of Education. And by look at it, I mean look at it crumble. That what I will say, not all teachers are bad.
No.
A lot of teachers are doing a really good job at a really hard job.
The majority of them.
However, and maybe it's different now. I don't know. But when I was a kid, I was told who my teachers were. I didn't get to pick my teachers. I couldn't go to school and say, I want a Christian teacher. I want a teacher who's not going to shove rainbow junk down my throat. I couldn't do that, mainly because I don't really remember ever seeing a pride flag in my school, at least until I got to high school.
You went,
and even in high school, I didn't see it much.
But you went to school where they played banjos down the hallways and stuff, right?
No, my school was actually predominantly African American.
Oh, so you went to school like in the inner city?
No.
So you
my school's right off the interstate in Lexington County. It's Ruby Red, Lexington County.
Normal.
My school, normal school that was predominantly African American.
Okay, cool.
When I say predominantly, it was over 50%, probably right around 53, 54%. A majority of my graduating class, actually, was African American. The point is, public school isn't necessarily the problem, and I think we can have a discussion off air about that. This first grade teacher, though, says she's building a community in her classroom. Ma'am, perhaps you should be teaching the first graders in your classroom
how to read,
how to write, how to speak, how to color. Perhaps that could be what you do.
2 + 2 = 4.
Right. And maybe you could do that. maybe, just maybe, you could, I don't know, help them grow as human beings when it comes to their mind. In her room, she has a Black Excellence mural.
Okay.
A land acknowledgement and a rainbow flag. And the rainbow flag says you are loved. Do you know what that tells me? That tells me that if your house doesn't have a rainbow flag, you're not loved.
Is her room a safe space for a
her room is not a safe space for I'm
Christian.
And other categories. No. No, I would say, here's the thing. It's first graders. They're six. They are 6 years old. I've told this story plenty of times, and I'll go back to it. Not every kid's the same, and I get it. When I was six, seven, eight, there was a young lady I went to school with. I did not understand that she was a different race until I was probably 10
right.
or 11. I didn't care. I had a best friend who was not only African-American, but he was a Jehovah's Witness. We were friends. I didn't care. You know why? Because I was six.
Right.
And we went to school together, and we sat near each other because his last name was E. My last name is H. So, in kindergarten and first grade, you usually...
Is that how they do that?
So, we sat...
Alphabetically. I didn't know that.
Yep, that's what we did for a little while, at least to start the school year.
That must be why they always put me in the middle of the room. I always thought it was so that I have an audience for my comedy routine.
Incorrect. In fact, I was number eight in my kindergarten class. I had the number eight, and yep.
Where you're a number, not
which,
a name.
Which, when I was in kindergarten in 2000, I was like, Dale Jr. So, woo. I just think that we need to be careful... On some of these issues, because it's now saying that if we take away the pride flag, we take away someone's humanity. No, we don't. You're still a human being.
By the way.
Also,
yeah.
You're six.
Yeah, and I understand six is young.
Six-year-olds aren't LGBTQ because you get it.
They need stability. They need security. They need safety. Yes.
You can keep them safe without a pride flag.
But...
Maybe you should
at some point you should create some friction. Some.
They're creating the friction with the parents.
Yes. Now, in other words, they need to be told no. No. As they get older, they need to learn that their consequences to, well, they need to learn that early.
Right.
Their consequences to good and bad actions. But they also need to learn that not everybody agrees with me.
So true.
Because the earlier we learn that, the better we are at embracing that, living that out in a way that is winsome and yet does not back off the truth.
Right.
Because the later we learn that, the more scared we are
sure.
of dealing with the truth.
Sure. Speaking of scared of dealing with the truth, I'm going to set the scene for you. Missouri.
Corn.
Missouri is...
arch in the middle of nowhere.
By the way, I'm not a big fan of the state of Missouri, simply because of the Missouri Tigers and the seeming inability of the Gamecocks to beat them in football.
Beginning anyway. Of the Oregon Trail.
Anyway.
I'm still setting the scene.
Thank you. Missouri is debating a bill that would ban adult cabaret shows in public.
I thought you were going to say dysentery.
Meaning that...
One is worse than the other.
Meaning that if you perform adult cabaret shows, and they go into the definitions in the bill, if you perform these in public and not in an adult cabaret setting where children are not allowed, then you will be penalized as such. It's a felony.
It's drag.
It's drag shows. Now, I'm going to set the scene
for
you.
And for all of you in Jackson, South Carolina, they don't mean... Like two cars.
I've been to Jackson Dragway. It's awesome.
Yeah, I know.
That's
Darlington.
That's actually fun drag.
it's the only kind of
and
drag.
And I'm not even into it, right? I'm not even into drag racing. I think it's a waste of time.
But
anyway,
it's
loud and fast and fun. All right. So this person appears before a committee. Now you're listening online today, so I'm gonna try to this person is wearing a blue.
Are you doing a Kamala Harris?
Yes, they are in the blue dress-ish with long sleeves. It is pretty sequined. Their face is painted blue, and they're wearing a tall Dolly Parton-style hairdo wig thing.
If you've seen
that, is half pink, half white.
If you've seen the
Avatar
meets Dolly Parton meets Jasmine from Aladdin
meets Miley Cyrus from a recent award show. Yep,
it convoluted.
Yeah,
it meets a young African American male.
Here's what this man has to tell you about the importance of
a natal male
of this gentleman talking about how he needs to be allowed the autonomy and authority to jiggle in front of kids.
Hello, my name is Maxi Glamour, MaxiGlamour. And it's a very unfortunate situation that we are here today to battle this inherently homophobic and transphobic bill that is intentionally put into place to eradicate gender nonconforming people from the public forum. While I understand that this bill was put into place by an uncultured individual who hasn't actually been to a drag show, the last time we were here, the bill was defeated because of the fact that there were many people stating the sociocultural, artistic, and economic benefits that drag provides to the state of Missouri. And so when we're looking at this, we are having a mass exodus of competent, socially aware, professional individuals leaving our cities because they are stuck within the confines of a white supremacist transphobic policy that keeps getting reintroduced year after year. All gender theorists, sociologists, and people who are looking at the research of this state that this transphobic rhetoric, this homophobia that is so pervasive, is actually creating negative psychological implications of trans individuals, of gender nonconforming people, and, you know, straight people. Straight people whose concepts of gender and their own gender dysphoria of not feeling man enough and not feeling woman enough is directly correlated to these erroneous laws falsely using cognitive science to prove that transphobia is some wonderful, great thing that we want to have. I'll be reading at a synagogue books about empathy, understanding people in the community, and being a good person. Some people in this audience should probably read some of those books because then they wouldn't be introducing these bills here today. And we can create an economic revenue to keep our young, talented population as opposed to sending them to New York, to Chicago, to Los Angeles, where we have aging populations who are dying out and creating a vacuum of hypervacancy, of wealth inequality, and a whole bunch of trauma.
Could you read me the definition of child?
It says, child, any person under the age of 14. Mm. I have a question. If you've already read this, why are you making me read this to you?
So would you and I be able to agree that if you're not an adult, you're a child? That is the perceived from my reading.
I think actually child is a socially contingent thing.
So that's a lot. First of all, I want to thank Max E. Glamour. Spelled with a U because they're so close to the British Empire in Missouri.
I thought they were surrounded by corn, a giant arch, and the beginning of the Oregon Trail.
I agree.
Wait, did I not set the scene right?
I don't think you did.
They're not part of the Nabi?
No.
Is that how you say that?
Yeah, I don't know.
Who knows?
There's... Okay, so I'm going to try to be gracious here. This man thinks it's his constitutional right to jiggle around in front of kids. And he says that if you don't think it's right for him to jiggle around in front of kids, then you need to be educated and you are uncultured because you've never been to a drag show. Let me explain something to you really quick. And I've said this before, and I'll say it again. Children shouldn't attend drag shows. Children shouldn't attend pride parades. Children shouldn't go to completely heterosexual strip clubs. Why? Because children are not supposed to be sexual beings. The idea and the push of our society right now to sexualize children at every level is disgusting, gross, and weird. And it gives rise to major issues such as pedophilia and human trafficking.
Wait, so you're saying if you introduce a child to hypersexuality at an early age. The statistics, science, data tell us that they're bent or have a predilection to sexual deviancy later on.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm telling you.
Whoa. That it's not just pathological. It's not just part of their DNA. Yes. That it's actually part of their nurture.
And what I will tell you is the person says that this bill is harmful to those who are transgender. How is that possible?
Because you're blocking their ability to express themselves in front of children.
Well, I mean, you shouldn't do that. So, yes, I am doing that. I just have to go back. And this is becoming, it's becoming my tagline lately. But if transgenderism is true, if men can really become women, then it's true for everybody of all ages. If transgenderism is false, as it is, if men really can't become women, as they cannot, then it's false for everybody too. And if it's false, then we should not indulge it, especially when that indulgence requires taking away the rights and customs of many people. If it is false, then for the good of society, and especially for the good of the poor people who have fallen prey to this confusion, transgenderism must be eradicated from public life entirely, the whole preposterous ideology at every level. The simple fact is, this movement, this ideology, doesn't spread through reproduction. It can't. It can't. Because I'm going to let you in on a little secret.
It's the same secret we've told you before.
It doesn't work. It's only done through, I don't want to say mind control or space lasers. It only works through mind warping.
Infection. It can't spread through procreation. It has to
almost like it's a contagion.
Indoctrination.
Which then, if we eradicate transgenderism, you know the best way to eradicate transgenderism at every level? Introduce people to the biblical understanding of gender. And the biblical understanding of manhood,
healthy
womanhood,
sexuality.
Healthy sexuality. A gift that God has given us.
There you go.
That is actually supposed to be used for our good and His glory, like everything else. And teaching and understanding that we're called to be fruitful. Fruitful. Guess what's not fruitful? Jiggling around in front of kids. That's not fruitful. Shocking. Lord willing, we'll be back on Wednesday with another episode of the fastest growing and strongest conservative talk show in the state of South Carolina. If you want more information on Palmetto Family, go to palmettofamily.org. Click on that email newsletter form to get subscribed to our newsletter. You can also click that invest button. Continue to support the work that we're doing both on this show in communities across the state and over at the State House. We very much appreciate your investment. And make sure you give this a 5-star rating and review. Share this with your friends and family on any audio app that you have, or Facebook or YouTube, however you want to disseminate it. You can also listen to every single show on those podcast platforms or on our website, palmettofamily.org/media. For Mitch Prosser, I'm Justin Hall. Thank you so much for listening today, and we'll see you back here on Wednesday on the Palmetto Family Matters Show.